Hello and a very warm welcome here at the Community Stage Hub. We are so happy to see that so many of you have gathered here. The next talk will be on privacy preserving health data. And this talk will give a demo on how you can use probabilistic data structures to process personal data without compromising the privacy of individual, and how it's possible to give third parties certain accesses while preserving individual privacy. Our speakers will be Magnesium, who is a PhD privacy researcher, activist, and hacker. And by his side, we have Bangeln, communication researcher in health service research. Give a very warm applause.
Hi, thank you for being here. My name is Magnesium, and as you already said, I do research on privacy issues. And within that, I came up with a method to store personal data in a privacy-aware way, and I will get to that later. I also did a lightning talk about the topic last year. Some of you might remember that. And there I said that I did the research on social media data, and then I came up with the idea that the method I used there would also be helpful for other types of data, for example, health data, because it's a very specific problem with privacy. And so I asked my friend Bangeln, because she does research on health services data, whether we want to do a project together and find out whether my method works for health data as well. And we also did a talk about this at the very good hacker conference Datenspuren in Dresden this year. And there we presented our interim results, and we were sort of enthusiastic about the results. And we promised that we keep on going and do further research to improve the results. And it turned out that this is less of an easy problem than we thought. But let's get into the health data issue in a more political way. We should talk about the European health data space as an example. There was a talk yesterday that showed off that the German way of the EHDS is sort of broken. But in general, it's only a sort of theoretical central data retention infrastructure for electronic health records. And this is for all Europeans mandatory, at least it's planned to be mandatory. The European Commission said it will be, or they came up with it in 2022, and it should be mandatory starting next year, or at least it was planned. Recent news showed us that they are not quite ready yet, and this is also what the talk yesterday showed, that everything is broken and so on. It will be there in the future, and we need to take care about it. Two major things about the EHDS would be that there's a primary use case where you can go to a doctor anywhere in Europe, and they know about your health issues, and you don't need to tell them everything again and again. But that's not our point. We are focusing on the secondary use, which would mean that all the data of all the European people would be also to use for science and industry. And that would not only be universities, as you might think, but also private companies like pharma industry, or also, for example, Meta, Google, and OpenAI. There we should pay very much attention about what those companies want to do with this data. And in our view, it's very critical that privacy issues need to be addressed within that. There's some further reading on EHDS for you. There's sadly not very much English language articles that we found. There's one which is from Inside Privacy, a sort of corporate blog that had a series about the secondary use of EHDS. The link will be in the show notes. And also from EDRI, there's a public letter to the EU lawmakers who were going to address that issue last April, I think. And there they were making points why what's being wrong with the project so far. And also there's a very good article, sadly only in German, on netzpolitik.org about questions about the EHGS and how it should work in general. So it sounds pretty bad when you read about it, but are we really doomed? We would say it must not be. It shouldn't be really the case that we have to fear of it, because we can also go ahead and do productive things. And this is why we're here, because we want to propose a method what you can do with it. When you do research with lots of data, large sets of data, then very many times what you want to do is count the data, or want to know how many items of what you want to count are in a set of data. And so in my research, I came up with a method to store that kind of data, and this is a method that's called probabilistic data structures. It's a data storage which is based on probability, or you can also say estimation. That means that you only store statistical information about the data. There's no original data in the storage you have, and there's also, very important, no pseudonyms. So you can use this kind of data that you stored only for a certain purpose, because you store the data only for that purpose, and it's not possible to do to do other stuff with it. For example, taking out individual data items. And so it sounds like it's a very privacy-preserving data processing method. But for now, this is only a thesis or in theoretical points of view, and we would now want to take a look at how this would work with a real-life use case.
Yeah, that's where the point. That's the point where I start. The problem when Mark proposed me the solution, magnesium, is that if you don't have the single cases in a data set anymore, you can't look on interdependent relations between different variables. You can't look if a person, the older it is, the more is the probability of a different issue with a heart, for example. So you have only the information in the data set, but not the relation between the variables anymore. And in health services research, we look especially how people do get access, for example, to healthcare practitioners or healthcare services, how much does care cost, but also what happens to patients as a result of special forms of care. And this you can only have a look at when you have more than the aggregates of the data. So we looked at a specific use case. That means we took a study from health services research. This is an example for such a study. The study looked at the association between structure and process-oriented measures and stroke long-term mortality. Means, in short, in different hospitals, you may have so-called stroke units, and these stroke units have a special form of treatment, of neurological treatment, and this increases the probability of survival if you have a stroke. Such a study in a normal way, you look at these questions, and especially in this study they did, with so-called routine data. This is data which is collected by the insurance companies while processing all the things insurance companies do. To get this data on a legal basis is possible, but it's very, very complicated. It's time-consuming and it's kind of nerve-wracking because you have to applicate for it. You have to wait more than 1-2 years to get these types of data. It's a big problem. Then a second difference I need to address in this use case, we took a look at this is not a study or a use case which deals with data which is stored in EPA or in your personal Patientenakte, but routine data from the insurance companies, which is quite similar in a way, but on a big level. A case we have in this study is this case, which is published in this paper, is not exactly reproduced by us. We had another time frame for the statistical analysis. We used other forms of statistics, but it is roughly based on it. So we examined the connection, or asked the question how to examine the connection between death by stroke and the presence of a stroke unit in a hospital, the special unit I talked about. And to get the data, we didn't get it. We had no possibility to get original data. We built so-called artificial data sets. I will say two more words in a few minutes about that. So we built a data set for the analysis of this interconnection between the stroke units and the possibility of death. The first data set is a population distribution in Germany, prevalence of stroke hospitals in Germany with specific treatment offers. And the second data set is a data set about hospitals in Germany that treat strokes with special treatments. These are all publicly available data. These links to the data you can find in the show notes. So we had these two data sets. The first one is completely random based on the population distribution, age, gender, depending on region and prevalence. The second one is real. These hospitals exist. And you can find information about the usage and the number of usage of these neurological complex treatment. These data is publicly available as long as the number of cases is bigger than 5. Data security or privacy. And we took these both data sets and made one of them.
This is how a random database table looks like, without any privacy, just the data that we talked about. On the left, you will see a case ID, and with this case ID, some variables like the age, the sex, the zip code and the hospital ID, which within that took place, and whether the stroke caused a death or not. And the obvious privacy-related data would be the case ID, because if you have the case ID, then you, and if you know other stuff, and you can relate from other data to the case ID back, so you can find out who that was. So the privacy relevant data is the case ID. So we want to store that data in our probabilistic data set, and we use an algorithm called hyperlog-log with that. This is a near-optimal cardinality estimation algorithm, as their author, Flaiolet, called it. And the construction of such a probabilistic data structure would go like that. You will take the string, which would be the case ID, and you build a hash from it. The hash will use a hash function that makes the hash equally distributed with the characters. Or more or less, like a good effort base. And from that hash, you take the binary representation. You split that binary representation into smaller sets called buckets. And from those buckets, you count the number of leading zeros. And then you only store the highest number of leading zeros. And the idea behind this is that the more leading zeros you will store, the larger the set must be. So if you have this this amount of leading zeros in your number, then you can say there must be at least this and that number amount of items in that set. This is the estimation process. To go a little deeper, we don't have time here, but there's this pretty good video, sadly only on YouTube, which the link you will find in the show notes, right? And there the process is explained pretty well. I want to show you how such a data structure looks like in your database. This is just a not really a random string, but it looks like it, but at least you can see that there's no data that you can figure out and make more knowledge of maybe saying, okay, this looks like a hyperlog log set. But let's get back to the table we just saw when you see the case IDs and the variables that are connected to the case ID. And you want to store those in such a hyperlog log set, then first you create other tables for each of the variables, and then you store the amounts of case IDs that match all the sets. Or you can do it in the first way, you count all the, or you store all the case IDs that match the age in one set, and then you take all the case IDs that match the sex and the zip code and also, and put these all in separate hyperlog log sets. Function look like that. You will have the case ID, and you hash it. And from the hash, you go to the set add function. You add the function to you add the hash to an empty set. And you get a larger set, which is in the third row on the right. And when you want to know the number of items within that set, which is called the cardinality, right? You will find out here in this case that it's one. It's not very spectacular to have a number of one. So here is a set which has 15,617 point something estimated. Items in it, and that is the number of survived strokes that we had in our database. But you would probably ask yourself why we are doing this with the algorithm and not just store the number within. The advantage of that structure, of that data structure, is that you can merge them with other sets. You can do unions and intersections, and so you can figure out if you have two sets, and some of the items are in both sets, then you can make statements about whether they are in both sets, or unify them and make statements about something where both items apply. And this is a very strong use case for those for the structure, and now we will see how we took advantage of that feature within our project.
Yeah, and since I'm the one for the use case and the one who counts all that stuff, I will tell you something about what we counted. First of all, I told you a few minutes ago that we have to differentiate between artificial data sets and synthetic data sets. Artificial data set is the one dummy data set we built at the beginning because we couldn't get any original data. Then we used this data set and handled it as original data set. We taught ourselves this is original data now, which we had from the insurance companies, for example, and want to do research on it now, but we want to do it privacy preserving. So we built from the cardinalities, or based on the cardinalities, some kind of synthetic data. That means it's a purely synthetic data set. There are no real cases, but the probabilities for the different values or for the different characteristics of the original data are built into our synthetic, I hate this word, data set, based on the cardinalities, because we treated those cardinalities as probabilities for the occurrence of data features. So we merged our two data sets, the data sets about the hospitals and the data sets about the population and the stroke. And then we took a look about the difference in two types of statistical analysis. Here you see the very simple form of a statistical analysis. It's like statistics at Bild-Zeitungsniveau. It's a so-called Pearson correlation. It says there is a relation between the treatment in a so-called stroke unit and the possibility of death. And you have four columns in this table. In the first column, you see the results of this Pearson correlation between these variables in our artificial data sets. Then we took a next step and built the data sets E1 and E2. E1, level 1, is calculated on the basis of the distributions of the aggregates of age, gender, hospital, zip code, and death in the artificial data set. So we took the cardinalities, handled them as probabilities, and took those informations to build synthetic data. So as you can see, the effect is still there. That means our artificial data set, E0, which we calculated based on the information from scientific data or publicly available data, shows our significant correlation between those variables, and the data set E1 shows it also. We have a data set ER. There we built a data set completely random as a control data set, and as you can see, there is no relation between the dependent and the interdependent variable. What you can also see is we did something in E2. We did the same as in E1, but there the aggregates, depending on age groups, we did the aggregates depending on age groups. So we took our data set and took 15 different age groups, and then we looked at the cardinalities for all the other variables in the 15 different age groups. So we got a level down. And then we did the Pearson correlation again, and look, it works. So since correlation is a little bit too easy, we also did a so-called binary logistic regression. There you can not only have a look at the relation between two variables, but you can also have a look to what extent, for example, does the presence of a stroke unit influence or affect the survival of a stroke. You can here see again in our artificial data set on E0, we have on the left side different parameters for the test. I will tell you about them shortly. On the first one, you have the so-called omnibus test. It shows that the model, the linear model in the regression analysis, is better than the chance to survive in a random data set. And you see that this value at E0 by omnibus is significant. And ER in the random data set, it's not significant, so there is no further analysis possible. That's why we didn't do there. The PR value should be significant depending on the level, see below, and the coefficient, my English is halt so scheiße, is negative. That means the probability of the death decreases in the presence of a stroke unit. Then we have the so-called odds ratio. It's a very important number. If it's greater than zero, the higher the chance that death will not occur, or here specifically, the probability of death decreases by a factor of 0.78 in hospitals with a stroke unit, or in other words, in hospitals with a stroke unit, you have a 22 better chance of survival a stroke. Now we have a problem, and we saw a problem in these analysis very shortly. You have the Cox and Snell indicator, and you have Nagelkerke, and these are pseudo-coefficients for the determination of the model quality. And they take values, Nagelkerke especially, between 0 and 1. And what you can see, the higher the value is, the better is the quality of the model. And what you can see is these models or these values are very, very low. That means we have a significant relation between these variables. We have an effect, and we have it also in the intersected synthetical data, which is no real data. There is no person or identifier in the data. But we have very, very much noise, obviously, in the data, which is a problem with synthetic data. If you take a look at literature, you'll find some remarks about that. So we thought about a possible solution. Our possible solution was at first to do two things. One thing, take more data, and the second thing, do more intersections. So we built a second use case. The use case handles with a survival time and dependence of a treatment in a so-called certified cancer center. If you have special types of center, special types of cancer, there are so-called certified centers where you can go and where you can get a special or a more complex treatment than, for example, in a normal hospital. And there is evidence, or very good evidence, that the treatment in such centers is very good for your survival time. So we took one of those studies and took a further look at colon cancer and pancreatic cancer and the survival ratio after 1 year. And we scaled up our data sets. In the first use case, we had 24,000 cases. I think in this use case, we had about 2 million. And we scaled up the number of intersections. We did the simple statistics again, the Pearson correlation. Remember, it's very, very simple kind of statistics, which says nothing about causality, but only about a not random relation between two variables. In the first table, you see on the left side the artificial data, which tells us the significance of the correlation between treatment in a center and the survival ratio is very, very low, which means very, very good in statistic. And what you can also see in the left column, N is the number of cases we had a look at. And the higher the number of cases is, the lower goes the P value. That means the value for the significant. That is a normal statistical effect. Variability is, of a result is likely to increase with a larger sample size. But on the other hand, we are talking about the EHDS. So what? On the second table, you can see our first synthetic data sets built on the base of the cardinalities without any intersections. And what you can see now is very important, because you can see that the p-values are not as significant anymore. This is okay, because if we take these cardinalities without any intersections, it's like the random data set in the first example. So we did some more intersections. We're scaling up the level of intersections in level 2 by two variables. First, we did it over sex, and second, we did it over age groups. And what you can here see is that in the first example, where we intersected over sex, to illustrate this more clearer, we took one group in our data set, males and females, and then we took the cardinalities from all the other variables. And as you can see, the p-values are more significant again, but if we do it over age group, and this is important at this point, they are lower again. So we found out that there might be a problem with the number of cases which go lower in every group, the more groups you build. That means if you have 15 age groups, every group is smaller than if you only have male and female. So these effects are leveling them out again. The sample size improves the probability, so that relation is not random. We took a third step and took a third intersection over on the one example over sex and age group, and on the other level over sex and treatment and a cancer. So in the left example, you have 30 different subgroups, and you see that the p-values are not significant anymore, because probably you have over 30 subgroups. And in the second example, you have only four subgroups. You have male, female, and you have treatment in a cancer center or not, four subgroups. And there, the p-values are significant again. So not only the overall size, but also the group size, respectively the number of groups which are results of the intersections of the different data sets, is a factor for the noise, or for the number of noise which you have in the synthetic data sets. So all in all, the scaling number or the scaling of cases in the data sets improved our results, but this could also be just a simple statistic effect, because if you have more data, then the p-values go further down. Multiple rounds of intersections increases the number of subgroups, and this levels out the effects. Then you have two further problems. Error accumulations in statistical data is the one problem. This is the noise problem, which I told you about. And aggregated data may also contain a so-called aggregation bias, because that what we are doing is very similar to using aggregation data. But there is an important point which Mark told you a few minutes ago, and which he will...
Yeah, that the advantage is that you can merge different sets from not only, like you saw in the table of our experiment, from different variables of one case, but you can also merge different cases that don't really fit together from the beginning, because a case ID could also be a health insurance number, for example, or a name or an email address or whatever. But in terms of the EHDS, that would probably be the health insurance number. And so you could, when you are able to merge different sets, you can also make assumptions and do further research on how different types of diseases or whatever could relate to each other. So while we are found out here within our experiment that it's still complicated to really trust the data that you get out of the estimated data sets, we still might want to use the technology, because we are able to do linkage and do research with this massive amount of data without actually giving out individual data sets and then making third parties do their own stuff with it, which probably in certain cases is something that we do not want. So for the outlook, we would probably have to, or not probably, we will have to get back to some tuning with the algorithm, because by now we were only using the standard default values for all the tuning mechanisms that are there. We might even find out that the Hyperlock-Lock algorithm is not the best we can use. There might be other algorithms that also do probabilistic data structures. From the last talk, we first focused on just getting more data, because back at that time we only had 20,000 items. Now we have 1.2 million data items, I think. And we found out that it does work if we have more items. But when you cut down the more items into smaller sets, then the data gets worse again. So it's not enough to have more data, but we also have to get back to figuring out how to use the algorithms better, because we want to use that technology and be able to link different data types and do research in a privacy-preserving way, and thus increase the trust in the EHDS in general within the public, and make not everyone opt out of the EPA, because not only Google and OpenAI wants to have the data, but also universities and researchers like Bangel. And so we still need to keep working on having good results and then rolling it out in the EHDS maybe later on. And that's the end of our talk. You can go to this website and take a look at all the links we shared. And there's also contact possibilities. If you are into working with us or have further questions, then please approach us. We're happy to talk. And also you can talk, ask questions right now.
Yes, thank you so much for this interesting talk. It has been live streamed, so we also have questions from the internet. Mm-hmm. You can write to the Mastodon and IRC channels and use the hashtag 38
or metric
C3 Hoff. But if we have some questions here in the room, we are also very interesting. Just raise your hand. We have the first one here.
So there has been cases that anonymized data was used together from different sources to recover private information. Do you have any proof?
It's very hard to understand what you're saying. Can you put the microphone closer?
Can you please repeat and speak directly into the microphone?
Yeah, do you hear me now?
Yes.
Perfect.
So there were cases that data from multiple sources that was already anonymized was used together to recover private information. Do you have any cryptographic proof that Hyperlog-Log is sufficient to prevent that from happening?
Well, proof is such a hard word, right? But the difference between anonymized data and statistic data is that anonymized data is still individual data items. You just don't know where they come from. But if you have other information about where that data would come from, for example, you don't know the health insurance number, but you know that there is only this one hospital and there has only been one person treated there, so you probably know who that was, right? So, and also, then anonymous data won't help you. With it, with that strategy, you might also be able to use other other information. And if you want to find out whether one specific item is within there, then it's as easy as you add that number or that item to the set, and if the cardinality doesn't change, then you know that it has been already in there. But that won't work with anonymized data because you would not have the health insurance number. So I don't really know how to answer your question completely because, no, we have not done such thing.
Okay, so there have been different approaches during the last years. Sitting here?
Okay, yes.
So there was, for example, approaches to use decentralized data, or there have been approaches to use anonymized data and to put noise to the data that they can't be de-anonymized anymore. Mm-hmm. And so you have now a different approach. But during the years, all these approaches were ignored. So I think it will be very difficult to get your approach to the people that make the decisions to use it. So, and I think it's not wanted because they want to use KI, and on your data, they can't use KI. So what can we do that we use your approach?
Very good question. This is why we're here and talk about it, because this is one of the rare chances to speak to the public about it, to people who are not ready to read a paper this is that long and you know, maybe not even accessible for everyone, unless ours are. But our strategy is to speak to people about it and get it done, that it actually works in a real way. I mean, I talked about last year that I did it with social media data, and health data is a bit different. Health data is more interesting in terms of privacy, and we're on it to make it work right and then tell people that we can use it. And we're on it. And you heard about it, and speak up if someone asks or says it won't work. Or I don't know. Yeah, this is what we're doing here right now. And I know it's hard. You're not the first person to tells us that it's not wanted by a lot of actors. But we're trying to do it anyway.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Do we have more questions? Please raise your hand. Anything you are curious about? I think we have a question over here.
Hi, thanks for the talk. Who are these people? Who are these people who work against you? I can imagine that there are institutions that are invested in making money out of the data they collected, and they don't want you to piggyback on that and also make extra money or extra efforts on this data. But who is this that?
Well, it's only a couple of weeks ago that our health minister, Karl Lauterbach, spoke at some conference that Meta, OpenAI and Google are standing in his door and are ready to make use of the data. So, but those are only the largest and in my opinion, most dangerous actors over there, but there's more. There are pharma companies that want to use it, and I don't know, open end, there's probably lots of people, and if it's just this random hacker group, and I don't know what Putin might want to use that data for, so there's probably a lot of attack possibilities, and as this talk yesterday showed us, it's very easy to get to the data, and so we might want to at least take some chances we have to create data sets that are free from the danger of exposing individuals. And so if we cannot tackle all of the problems, we might tackle at least some of them. If we use the data for the for the use cases they are which it can be used for, and yeah, that's what we're working on, that we can make this possible.
Thank you so much for great questions. Do we have some more? I think we have some more time.
Here's one.
There's one here. I'll just go.
So, as I understood you right, you have an algorithm to anonymize the data.
No, not anonymize.
Oh, not that's yeah. I know, but synthesize, kind of.
Yeah.
So basically, you have a single institution of trust to do that, or, but basically, because we have this data space, so we have the data that is raw, and it has to be manufactured for a course, so someone can use it, and he wants to use, I don't know, that specific data set or that part of the data set, so someone has to use this algorithm, so we have to have one organization that we can trust with this data? Or is there anything or any ideas you have?
Well, yeah, okay, you're totally right. The data must be stored as individual data because of the primary use case that certain doctor may read that data for you. But beyond that, there is the secondary use, and that's the case where some individual or company or whatever will approach a, I don't know what kind of organization that will be. The European health data space is a theoretical concept by now, and the approach to start the secondary use is scheduled for 2028. Because probably they don't know yet how to do it themselves at the European Commission yet. There is some reading about how they're going to do it, but it's, you know, it's EU speak, and I did not get into how exactly that's going to be done, but in my assumption, it will be that there is some sort of industry standard in which the data will be shipped, and I imagine that there would be the possibility to get this data in a probabilistic data structure as the default. If that would be hyperlog or something else, we will see. But that would be the default. You approach this institution and say, "I need that amount of data." That kind of data, and that and that and that kind of data, all those different sets, because I would like to intersect them within my research later on. And you will probably then have to explain why you need that data. And then, as I said, there will only be that one use case, which will be then by people like us probably, prepared and then distributed to that institution, and beyond that, there might be other possibilities to get the data when you get to the point as Bangel is right now, where she says, "Okay, I can't work with that data. I need that data in another way." And Yeah, then that's probably more of a political question that people have to decide how to handle that problem. But in our focus, that would be the default is to get only a statistical data set as we showed it. And if that doesn't work, then we will look for something else.
We have a question from the internet.
Yes. Thank you for the talk. Unfortunately, the question is not from the internet, but for me.
Great. Okay.
There are no questions from the internet, unfortunately.
We're looking forward to hear it anyway.
There is also the...
Louder, please.
And please speak up.
There is also the technique to use homomorphic encryption. Can you point out to work on encrypted data instead of the actual data?
Can you point out the differences? I cannot.
Okay.
But we can probably talk later on about what your ideas are.
Okay, thank you.
There's a question in the audience.
So there was a proposal of using so-called differential privacy that you somehow guarantee that a given number of queries does not reveal enough bits of information to then de-anonymize it, right?
Yes.
So the data that is queried would not be anonymized. But the results of the queries would be guaranteed to be anonymized. How do you compare with probabilistic data structure?
As I said, I started working on that with social media data. And there I found that when you have millions and millions of data items, then if you use differential privacy, it basically means that you add even more data to it, which would make it really hard to cope with that really large amount of data. And this is why we came up with using something else, like a probabilistic data set, because that is, compared to the original data set, very, very low data, very little data. So with that approach, we came to that topic. And so I wanted to try, does it work with what I did before with health data? Maybe it does in some cases, maybe it does not. Maybe going back to the question before, maybe if the data is so little that probabilistic data structures won't work to distribute, then we can also go back to maybe use differential privacy to protect the data when you give it out. But we didn't get into that from now, but it will be a possibility for later research.
We still have a little bit of time. If somebody have a question, please raise your hand. Otherwise, we'd like to thank you so much for giving this talk, Magnesium and Bangl. Give a very big applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.